Okay, it's December 12th, 2017. Another in a series of our interviews on the West Dubuque History Project. Today we're going to visit with one of the originals. This is Tim Showalter. And Tim, we usually start and go back in your memory, if we can, as far as give us a little background in your growing up years in Dyersville and going to school.
I pretty much grew up in Dyersville. My family moved to Dyersville when I was probably 2 or 3 years old. I went through the Xavier grade school and Xavier high school, private schools at the time. Once I finished with high school, and that was in 1962, I kind of shopped around for colleges, and I was successful in some and not so much in others. But eventually, I did graduate in a 4-year span. I happened to be home at Christmas one time, and I called Wayne Drexler to see if I could come to his house or come to school over to his office and see if I could just have like a mock interview, because Wayne was a friend of my dad's and a friend of our family. So anyway, at the end of the interview, unbeknownst to me at the time, as I was saying goodbye to Wayne, he said, "Well, by the way, when can you start?" And I said, "Well, I don't know why." And he said, "Well, how would you like to start in January?" And I said, "Well, I'm not here for a job interview." He said, "No, but you're going to get a job out of this." And, because that was way back in the days when the ESEA, the Elementary Secondary Education Act, would kind of came into being. And the problem was is that they had too much money and not enough people. So I was hired back in that January of 1967. 1967, to be a reading teacher for the district. I taught a year, the second half of that year at the old St. Joe High School in Farley part time, and Leo High School in Holy Cross part time, and then that was kind of the way it got started.
That was 1967.
That must have been 1966. I'm not sure. I got to think about that date a minute. Then there was a year at Petersburg, and because at that time there were a lot of West Dubuque teachers teaching in the private schools, because of this ESEA money, it was legal back in that day.
And good hot lunches there.
Hmm.
Good hot lunches.
Oh yeah, they had Mrs. Dolmeyer was the head cook at Petersburg, and I was her food taster for whatever they were going to have for lunch that day. I would always have two meals. I'd have breakfast. They'd make me breakfast about 9 o'clock, and then hot lunch would be about 12 o'clock. So those were good days. And after that, it was back into the public system. I went over to Epworth Elementary and taught 5th grade Epworth Elementary. And that was the year before Farley was built. And then when Farley was built, then we all packed up and we moved to Farley, and we all moved into portable classrooms, because even then they built a new school and it wasn't built big enough.
Isn't that such a sad?
Yeah. So I was out back, and I think at the time there were like 16 portable classrooms behind what was in Farley Elementary, Farley Junior High.
Yeah.
Taught back there with a kind of a. It was just back in there. It was a fun day. They were good days. And Scotty Harris was one of my proteges, and Scott could catch a football better than anybody I ever could throw one at. So those days were good. And
what level were you teaching?
I was teaching 5th grade math, science, social studies.
Okay.
And but we had a good time. The back in those days, the Estes rockets were big, and we used to shoot off Estes rockets. I remember Tom Wickham was the principal, and I remember going to Tom one day, because when I went to Farley, I became a sixth grade teacher. So some of the kids I had at fifth grade Epworth also became my sixth grade students at Farley, so I got to teach a lot of those kids 2 years. After a couple of years at sixth grade, for those first couple of years, and I started getting interested in something called outdoor education. So I went to Tom Wickham and asked him what he thought about it. He wasn't against it. He said it sounded exciting. So that was kind of how that sixth grade camp got going. And that was one of the initiatives that we had when I was a sixth grade teacher.
Early 70s, maybe. Huh?
Yeah, it was because I know that there are grandparents out there today that I taught that went to sixth grade camp, and now their grandchildren are going to sixth grade camp. So I'm hoping that it sounds like the teachers, the sixth grade staff that are there today, love the idea of camp, so hopefully it'll live for quite a while.
How did you hook up with Camp Little Club?
Pardon?
Like, how did you hook up with Camp
Little Club? Well, the first, I met up with a principal in Dubuque, and they went over to Camp Iwalu. Strawberry Point. And I visited their camp for a day. Took a couple of other teachers, and we went over, and then came back, and we realized that that was too far away to go. And at the time, Dubuque was thinking about maybe Camp Little Cloud. So I got going to Camp Little Cloud. I talked to the directors out there, and it was kind of a automatic no-brainer. Yeah, come on. So we went out there and we camped in tents, and it was just kind of a fun project that has really turned into quite a
learning experience.
Yeah, we went from 1 day to 3 days to 5 days. So those were good times. So
that was those some great memories of those days and. How about some of the people you work with, staff-wise?
Well, yeah, back in those days, the names of Shirley Oberding and, oh man, that's not fair. Trying to think of the Ruth, Ruth was an older gal from Worthington.
Our teacher,
yeah. Well, Ruth Kelker was the Dyersville teacher, and
talk about an intimidating presence.
Yeah, I just remember, and hopefully this won't make the transcript, but I remember telling Tom Wickham one day that if because Ruth had a nasty habit of if kids came to her class unprepared, she would send them back to the classroom. And that was our only free period during that time. And then if Ruth was angry with somebody, they'd say, you go back to the classroom. And then, but we'd be back there. But anyway, Mike Healy was a seventh grade teacher. He was in the portable. Bill Betts was out there in the portable. Don Till was out there. Dick Smith was out there.
Peter Garland.
Peter Garland was in the building. Peter was he was a junior high Lang Arts teacher. I believe he taught with my wife back in those days. And it was just kind of a Don Schmidt from Holy Cross was out and back. Teaching German. Bill Betts was a friend and a crazy person. I remember one time Don taught German, and that was really kind of a unique thing that we did have a German class during that day. And that one day Bill dressed a whole bunch of priests or elementary age children up as Adolf Hitler and had them marching in and out of classrooms, which was horribly inappropriate.
Oh my God!
But
funny
as could be, yeah, they walked through in goose step fashion with their little black mustaches. So
I heard this story not very long. I don't know where it came from, but about Bill Betz, who at one point talked to a girl in his class. He had a tape recorder, and he started the tape recorder, and she would say, help me, and then he would continue just the recording, and intermittently she'd say, help me, and so then he took it to Wickham's office, and there was a storage cabinet behind. So he put this in there, and was having a parent conference.
Oh no!
Oh yeah.
Bill was wow. One of a kind, and
what a gifted teacher.
Yeah, and because it was the he really was a gifted person, and kind of a personal sidelight. Everybody kind of remembers the day that a certain generation remembers the day that Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
And I was a sophomore in college, going to Loras College at the time, and we had noontime basketball, intramural basketball. And I remember, and Bill was from Dubuque, and he was a day student. But anyway, the day that Kennedy was shot, I was playing basketball, and the old Lord Kane, or the Academy Gymnasium, yeah. When against Bill Betz, and I remember that somebody came into the gym and told us to stop the game, and said that John Kennedy had just been shot. And I remember we all kind of knelt down on the floor in the middle of that gym and kind of put our arms around each other and said a prayer. And that was the first day that was my first remembrance that of Bill Betz. So later on, when I was teaching at Farley, and then Tom Wickham said that bringing in a new staff, and one of the people that was coming was Bill Betz. I said, "Is that Bill Betz from Dubuque?" He said, "The one and only." So it was kind of a full circle type thing.
You know, that situation with the assassination. I was at Bellevue Marquette for a year when that happened, and anyway, I got invited to a reunion of the class of 65, I think it was, 2 years ago, so I had some of those people's email addresses. Well, it got to be November 22nd, and I thought, I emailed a couple of those kids back from then, and what their memory was, because they were there at the same time. So anyway, the one guy said, he was in this sister whatever's class, and she cried. She was crying. But the other one, the girl I emailed, she said, I was in study hall in the library, and when the announcement came, this guy was across the table from me, and he said, "At least it wasn't Jackie." She said, "I've got to strangle it."
Oh no, that's terrible.
Anyway, so back to your
trip. Well, I was probably in Farley teaching classroom 6 or 7 more years, and Wayne Drexler was still superintendent, and that was by at the time when they needed a business manager, and I had no business background or anything else, but I kind of knew I wanted to do something besides teach. So I went over and I asked Wayne Drexler, I said, "I see you're looking for a business manager. What does that job entail?" He said, "Well, you don't want to be a business manager. You want to be a building principal. You want to be an administrator." And unbeknownst to me at the time, I think Dave Wegman was already hired to be the business manager. And so then I got involved with I turned in my old boss. I used to be the ESEA teacher, remedial reading teacher, and then the only administrative slot that was open at the time was an elementary or was a the ESEA director. So then that took me out of the classroom. I became the director of that program. I think I had like 17 teachers and seven different teaching centers. And I was their boss. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew I wasn't back in the classroom. So my office at that time was in a portable classroom behind Farley at the time. I did that job for a couple of years, and then the principalship at Dyersville opened up, and the principalship at Dyersville at that time was Dyersville Kindergarten, Dyersville Corton Camp, which was a shared time 7th and 8th grade with Beckman, and 4th grade at Warning Hall was where my office was, and that was a shared grade with Xavier Grade School.
So had you taken your administrative courses along the way?
I had, yeah. Throughout that whole time at Farley, I was taking courses at Clark and Dubuque, and Tom Wickham was quite an influence on me as far as what he did, and I liked what he did as an elementary junior high school principal. I kind of wanted to follow in his footsteps. I wanted to be his assistant principal, is the truth, and then I wanted his job. That's kind of how I got my master's degree in elementary elementary ed, administration, and that's when the Dyersville thing opened up. I was in Dyersville for 5 school years, and then I got transferred to I think Harold Knutson was principal at that time. Not quite sure about that.
That was 68-69.
So I went. Then I went to. I was the principal at Cascade Elementary and Barnard Elementary. I was at Cascade and Barnard for another 5 years, I believe, and then Farley opened up as the assistant principalship, and I jumped at that. Went to Farley. I was the assistant to a couple of people, Mike Houselog, Tom Wickham, and can't remember that. I even followed somebody called Bob Howard and Brian Heideck in that role. But anyway, then after I was the assistant principal for a few years, we divided the school. Trish Warner came in from down south. She came in from Cascade and Barnard. And then she and I ran the K-8-12 building. We weren't an elementary and we weren't a junior high. We were just a K-8 building. And she and I sat down and we decided, well, you take the elementary and I'll take the junior high, the 7th. So I took the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and she took the K-5. We did that for a couple of years. Then the board right in there, Farley Elementary, with the dedication, the schools were going to be named after Wayne Drexler, so then we became Drexler Middle School, and at that time Drexler Elementary. So I went through the rest of those years, many years, I can't remember how many years at Farley, and then the last 2 years I was transferred over to Piasta Elementary to finish out my 46 years with Western Dubuque. So
you wore how many hats? My God!
Yeah, it was incredible, especially at Farley at the junior high. We had in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade because Trish became there were no more principals and assistant principals, and so my tenure at Farley Junior High School, I was alone, I did have a guidance counselor and I did have a nurse, but I didn't have anybody else administratively to help me, and I did that job for all those years. Superintendent at that time was Harold Knutson, and that was pretty much it. I loved those days. Those were the best days ever. Those last 20 years of my career. And
okay.
So.
Well, obviously, an incredible amount of change in the way that directions that education took over those years, especially with the advent of technology and how that fed into dealing with students and staff and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the whole idea there were so many more. The good old days were kind of gone, and the more accountability got to be more and more the name of the game, and greater emphasis was being placed on testing, and
paperwork,
and all of a sudden the fun was being taken out of some of it, and that responsibility was always a challenge. But it was still a time well spent.
I always remember it's amusing to me when I talk with other educators and people who were in other systems, maybe more or less, more so the rural systems, and they say, well, yeah, we had 12 buses, in our picking up kids. Yeah, I'd say, well, I think we at one point we had 77,
yeah,
something like that.
90 some routes.
It's hard for people to understand the geographical makeup of our district, where you have kids coming from north of Luxembourg. I don't know how those kids did it as far as activities at the high school, because once they got done with their practice or rehearsal,
yeah,
they would have a 40-minute drive home.
Everybody kind of knows the size of the district and the miles from the north border to the south border, and probably close to 30 miles, I'm not sure, but I remember school being called off in Western Dubuque because of snow and ice and everything else, and then a Cascade was wondering why you're closing school, because the weather was perfectly fine down there. So our buses do run all over the place, and
and you have some memories of some of the drivers. One of my favorites was Joanne Kramer.
Oh yeah.
And she would get out there in a foggy morning, and all of a sudden you'd hear on the bus radio, Lila, what are we, the hell are we doing out here?
I know a couple of funny stories, but one of the funniest stories I ever heard, I think I was in Wickham's office, and then we had bus radios there, and that was always exciting to hear the bus drivers talk. And all of a sudden, Gary Less was the transportation director in that time.
Yes.
And one day, we heard somebody in a panicked voice saying, "What time does the train go through Farley?" And a long pause, and then in a higher voice, "What time does the train go through Farley?" So finally, you heard somebody. It might have been Lila Clemon, over and picked up a microphone. And she said, who is this? And she said, never mind who this is. What time does the train go through Farley? She said, why do you need to know that? She said, because I'm stranded on the tracks. So all of a sudden, there must have been every teacher at the Farley, because it was right, the first railroad track crossing right there by the Farley School. We all ran over there, and we had to try to push the bus, and I think Gary Less came with an old pickup truck and pushed the bus off the track. So, yeah.
Who was the driver, do you remember?
I think it was Julie. Remember Julie?
Yeah. What time was the bus?
The other good one was one night. Oh, one more quick story. I was in Drexler's office. When we got bus radios, it was a big deal.
Oh yeah, that was huge.
But apparently the bus radios were installed, and I don't know where they picked up the buses. They're down in Springfield, Illinois, or someplace downstate Illinois. So that was always in August a big deal when they bought some new buses and they would go to Springfield and pick these buses up.
Yep.
So there was a meeting, I think it was a negotiation meeting or something, maybe it was after a school board meeting. We were in Wayne Drexler's office, pretty sure it was Drexler's, and all of a sudden we could hear this crackling on the two-way on the bus radio, these two bus drivers talking. It was probably 9 o'clock at night, and they were driving back from someplace downstate Illinois. And all of a sudden, one bus driver said something about, 75. And then the other one said, 78. And then they said, what it ended up being is that these two bus drivers were racing these brand new buses back to Farley and back to Epworth. And I think by the time they finished, they were both going over 80 miles an hour in these brand new buses. Well, I just remember Drexler heard it all. And what happened to those two guys after that, I have no idea. But I'll never forget that story. Yeah.
You know, as far as incidents, when I was in Dyersville, I joined the Lions Club.
Oh, okay.
And we had noon meetings downtown at the cafe, whatever that was. One was, anyway, this one day we had the meeting, and so we're all together coming out, going back to wherever they worked, and I was standing there on the street, and there was that stoplight right there at that intersection. And all of a sudden, this driver ed car pulls up. And I look over, and of course, it's a red light. And there's Al Rutledge in the passenger side. He's like, he's sound asleep. All these guys are looking because it's this red light. Oh, God.
Al Rutledge was quite a guy. Al Rutledge and the one time all the transportation office was in the central office. So Lila Clemen was like the secretary, the assistant, and Al was he was in charge.
Put the pins on the.
Yeah, they had that big board full of all the pins. But anyway, what happened was Al had a new chair, and Lila had an old chair. So whenever Al would leave the building, then Lila would always switch chairs. She always thought she should have the new chair. That was always the big scuffle in the central office when Al would come back to the office and find out that somebody had swiped his chair. And, oh, God, that was terrible.
Yeah, I could not. I mean, I have trouble even imagining how Al would plan a route. I'd be able to.
I don't know. Yeah, I remember that. That pre computer day with the different colored strings and the different colored pins on that big board, and you could follow the yellow thread from house to house. How they ever did that without missing people, I have no idea. But it must have been an arduous task at best. It must have been awful.
You mentioned the bus radios, and the thing with us at the high school, every June, there was always the Western trip.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for years.
Yeah.
And it was a nice program. But anyway, they would take the Suburbans, and the Suburbans all had bus radios.
Yeah.
Well, at that time, it was in June, and invariably, you would get atmospheric conditions where that
skip
would skip back to us, so we could hear them going through the mountains in Colorado.
Oh, wow.
So we always look forward to.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Hearing the conversations. So anyway, you hung it up in, you said 2006, was it?
Yeah, 2006. The years kind of slipped by, but it's been six school years out now. And so since then, we have young grandchildren, and we spend an awful lot of time on the road, either going to Chicago or Minneapolis or in the air going to California. So these retirement years are being kind to us, and we're enjoying it.
Well, you went through, I'm thinking superintendent-wise.
All of them,
From Jeff Harold and, well, Bev.
Bev.
Bev's short interim in right. superintendency. And Dwayne. And I still marvel at what Wayne is able to accomplish. He told us about he was a county superintendent.
Right.
When this all broke, you know, it was his job to organize the meetings in the communities, and what she did prior to the bond issue votes and all that stuff. And he said that he was still the superintendent of the county. He said after the decision had been made to continue to merge into this district, he was, he said, like it was May. He said, I was out in my yard, and he lived in Dubuque at that time, cutting my grass. And he said, the car pulled up, and guys pulled out. It sounded like it was Ray Sherman and Bud Ross. And
yeah.
He said, they came over and they said, well, they said, we've been talking, and we want you to be the superintendent of the new district. Oh, he got his.
I know. That was good. Yeah. No, all the superintendents and the change, the size of the district, the number, how the population has exploded, and it's good to see that. Closing a Bernard school, I'm sure that was a tough decision.
Yeah.
The best news I think I've heard recently, though, was that there is some legislative talk now about